Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the European referendum in 2016.
And my name's Jazza and I would like to happily announce my candidacy for leader of the Conservative Party, with Theresa May stepping down. I think it's about time that we had a staunch Remainer enter the race. And as an official member of the Conservative Party, I can't stand, can I? I'm not an MP, but I can vote, and that is hilarious.
I mean, you're not a member of any other political party, are you?
I think my Lib Dem membership ran out like a few months ago. So currently, I mean, this is I'm a Tory.
I mean, is it legit for you to be in the Tory party and to have voted Lib Dem in the European elections?
Of course it is.
Is that a sackable offence? Because I know it's a sackable offence in certain parties.
Well, it did for Michael Heseltine. He voted Lib Dem, didn't he?
He did, as did Alistair Campbell, still currently of the Labour Party, I think.
Everybody's defecting. Everybody is seeing yellow. Welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about politics, social issues and current events. This is our, I guess, Theresa May resignation and European election special.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I am currently in Los Angeles, where the weather is worse than in London, because sod's law. We wanted to jump on and kind of talk about what has been a very heavy news week, and hopefully cut through some of the bullshit and give you a nice, balanced, compromising take on current events.
I'm not sure how ironic you're being at this point.
Neither am I.
Okay, that's good. So we sort of outlined roughly what it is we're going to talk about. So should we just jump to the begging for money section of the podcast and then go straight into it?
Let's do that. Please give us money. It helps.
If you've made it this far through the podcast, I'm assuming you at least somewhat enjoy what we do, and if you'd like to support us financially, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable. It doesn't cost a great deal of money to keep this thing going, but we do need money for hosting and that sort of thing. Our current patrons include David Warner, Emerson Spartz, Gemma Cumming, John O, Matt, Michael Costa and Ollie McGregor. Thank you very much for anyone who's currently supporting us and anyone who has done so previously. If you'd like to join them, go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable. Jazza, I'm looking at the full results for the European parliamentary elections, including countries that are not the UK, and I really just don't know who any of these groups are, to be honest with you. There's a lot of acronyms going on, and none of them mean anything to me.
Would you like me to break it down?
Possibly. I mean, I was just making a wider point about political representation, but you can actually go and break it down. See, and explain the wider context before we return to the UK.
Yeah, so one of the biggest problems with one of the biggest criticisms of the EU is that a lot of its systems are not understood by many of its citizens and that it's too complicated. So I saw this and realised that I didn't understand a lot of things. So then I used Wikipedia and looked them up. Not being passive-aggressive, just true. So, there's when we look at the EU Parliament as a whole, you see kind of groupings of different parties that have similar alignments. So you'd see kind of groupings of the equivalent of the Conservatives, the equivalent of Labour, the equivalent of the Lib Dems, the Greens, etc. The largest grouping to come out of this is the EPP, the European People's Party, who sound communist but are actually centre-right. So that's where the Conservatives used to live, but now, because of David Cameron, they left and formed their own grouping called the ECR. The Socialists and Democrats, who are Labour's grouping, ended up with 19% of the vote. EPP got about 25%. The ALDE are the Liberals, so that's where the Liberal Democrats sit. And they got 14%. And then the Greens ended up with 9% of the vote and had a huge showing across the European Parliament, actually. And what actually I think is most interesting about this result that we see across the whole of the European Union is that we were expecting a huge surge in nationalist parties. Now, they did top the votes and win, technically, the national elections in certain countries, like in Italy and in France and in the UK, which still a member.
Don't rub it in, mate.
Just, I'm doing my best. But we saw obviously like a surge in those votes, but by no means is it going to like completely change the makeup of the European Parliament. What is going to slightly change the makeup of the European Parliament is the fact that the centre right and the centre left no longer have an overall majority. Even though there is kind of like there's more compromise in the European Union Parliament because of the fact that they. Because of the fact we have proportionate representation, and so you don't work with majorities, you work along compromises. But yeah, that's what's happened over the night. Did I explain it a little bit better for you?
I think you did. You alluded initially to this problem that people don't really understand the groupings in the European Parliament, certainly not as strongly as they understand what a Labour politician is roughly like in the UK and what a Tory politician is roughly like in the UK. What's your solution to that problem if for countries that are going to remain in the EU?
Well, people... So apparently when we started rolling out... votes for the European Parliament and people started voting on them, there were considerations as to whether or not people would run as European parties rather than their individual parties in their nation. And I kind of agree with the fact that I don't think that's a very good idea because of because it requires like a next level of understanding, and you already have that vernacular of being able to talk about politics from your own national standpoint by talking about like the Lib Dems or Labour or whatever. And ultimately, your national politics is going to shape how you vote as well, even though it's European elections. It's with education and outreach is how you end up talking about it, and it's by making sure that we have. Journalists who cover the European Parliament properly. There's so few in kind of like national media that will talk about like the EPP or the Socialists and Democrats or ALDEs.
I think this problem is very illustrative of my wider problems with the EU, in that it is something that has been designed from the top down by bureaucrats, and they're trying to crowbar existing allegiances and identities, you can even use that word, into this wider system, and it's just a total clusterfuck. I mean, there's no amount of education and outreach that is going to actually bring about the change that I think you want to be brought about, in my opinion. I just think fundamentally this just doesn't work.
I disagree. I think it does work. I like the fact that it works by consensus, and the fact that
I'm not talking about the machinations of the Parliament in relation to legislation and whatnot. You know, I'm sure that that does get passed through.
Cool. What do you mean?
I mean, in terms of how a British citizen or Norwegian, they're not actually in the EU, or a French citizen or a German citizen relates to the European Parliament. I'm interested in politics. You know, you might be aware I run a political podcast. I just look at this list. I'm like, who are these fucking people? Like, I know Guy Verhofstadt because he, you know, has created a side career for himself trolling Brexiteers, which is quite entertaining, but, you know, doesn't necessarily relate to his role in the European Parliament. This, you know, I just cannot see this system ever working in the way that, in terms of how your average citizen relates to the British Parliament versus a citizen related to the European Parliament, I just can't see that change being created. If you see what I mean,
I think I disagree.
Yes.
Because one of the most consequential politicians of our time is an MEP. It's Nigel Farage.
I don't think that his role as an MEP is necessarily that significant in his national profile.
It's the justification for his national profile and for the amount of press attention that he gets.
I suppose that is true, but. You know, I mean, he's pretty much the only MEP anyone can name, and actually a lot of people who do think they know who Nigel Farage is probably don't know that he's an MEP. So I, this system is totally dislocated from how people actually think and function and identify.
Yeah, but I don't think that that's the system's fault.
That's the people's fault.
No, it's not the people's fault. It's the media's fault. It's the media's fault and the national politicians' fault for not including this in the way that we talk about our politics. And especially when we talk about kind of things such as like climate change and like international trade policy and stuff like that. People decided to just not write about it rather than write about it from a European perspective. And I think that's the problem rather than... I don't think that the system is actually that complicated.
I mean, yeah, the system... Well... Is it that much more complicated than, say, the British parliamentary system? Maybe not if you get into the nuts and bolts of it.
I think it's less so, actually.
I mean, it is another layer that sits on top of the British parliamentary system, so it's something else you have to know. So in that sense, it is more layers. But I think the thing you said about blaming the media for how people identify and think about being European versus being British, I think is actually quite an interesting... It's an interesting insight into the fundamental differences in our worldviews. I think the media is actually just responding to pre-existing appetites. And the media doesn't write about European affairs from a this is the British media I'm talking about, from a pan-European perspective. They write about it from a British perspective because that's how people think, you know, that they're tapping into something that's already there.
And but I think that there's some responsibility to educate the electorate as well. Like it's one of the pillars of the BBC is to educate, entertain, and inform right? And so that's something that the BBC actually has fallen down on. And obviously there are other media organisations, and especially like the papers who have less grandiose. Like themes in the way that they run their shop, but there's certainly a responsibility to especially the larger media companies to make sure that people understand the systems that they're partaking in. Shall we talk about the?
Let me just respond to that.
Of course, you may.
I don't think that there is a fundamental responsibility. You know that really depends on whether or not you think we should be European, which is ultimately a political decision. I understand that a lot of Remainers are frustrated with how the British press covers European affairs. For that reason, but you know, ultimately, if the Telegraph editor thinks fundamentally we're not European, we're British, or you know, he thinks that is the way things should be, that's a political decision. You know, there's no obligation for people to play things as the European Commission wants them to be played. So, so that sort of really speaks to our fundamental divergence on this entire issue, I think.
Our fundamental divergence. I feel like that would have been a really good alternate name for the podcast.
Maybe. So we probably should turn to the British aspect to these European elections, now that we've established that I don't understand the European one.
So, the Brexit... Who did you end up voting for, you interesting man?
I ended up voting for the Brexit Party.
Oh, well, very well. How do you feel about...
I should have got you to guess, actually. That was a missed opportunity. Do you know who you would have guessed before I actually told you?
I didn't... I think you would have spoiled your ballot paper, actually. That's where I thought you may have been. Because you don't like hard Brexit.
No, I'm a bit sceptical about hard Brexit.
Are you aware that that's what you voted in support of?
That's not how I see it, to be honest with you, because actually the Brexit Party is not at the controls. This again comes back to a criticism.
How they're trying to frame it, Nigel Farage and Anne Widdecombe are going around saying that they should be part of any future negotiations now.
Well, they shouldn't. I mean, that's not the role of not the role of an MEP.
Oh, I'm glad we knocked that on the head. Fantastic.
I suppose, you know, this is sort of the thing, is that actually no one really knows what an MEP does. And I guess, obviously, you know, policy wonks and people who are interested in these sort of things do have an idea of what they do. But, you know, I saw this particularly in the current context, but the European Parliament is not, because it can't propose legislation, it's more of a editorial body within how the EU writes and passes legislation. Mm-hmm. That means it's sort of less influential in how things are run. And because we are, you know, in theory, we are still leaving, although that's very much open to interpretation as, you know, as to whether that will actually take place at this point. But I think this, from my point of view, it was a protest vote in the purest sense of the word, or the phrase. I don't think that the Brexit Party should govern things, but I think Brexit should still take place. And for me, the most obvious way to convey that view was to vote for the Brexit Party. But you know,
so we should run through the how everybody did. Yes. So in terms of seats,
we should probably say you voted Lib Dem, didn't you? I think you revealed it on the last podcast. But yeah,
have you listened to this podcast before? You can probably guess who I voted for.
Yeah.
But the in case you've been living under a rock, the Brexit Party won about 31% of the vote. Liberal Democrats won about 20% of the vote. Labour came third with about 14%. The Greens came fourth with about 12% of the vote. And the Conservatives ended up with only 10%. And then you have kind of like the nationalists and kind of like third parties all with like about 3% and returning like Plaid are returning one, the SNP are returning three, I believe, right?
Yeah, that is correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually quite interesting because even though the European elections are done on a more proportional system than the British general election, Plaid got one MEP despite having only 1% of the vote. Change UK and UKIP had 3% each and they got zero MEPs. But it was more spread out, so...
Yeah, because we still regionalise things, and I think that's important for having, like, those regional parties as well, like, represented. But Plaid beat Labour in Wales, which is a really big deal, and the first time that's happened in a national election, right? Have you been as frustrated as I have about people trying to put... people the shares of the vote into pro-Brexit and anti-Brexit? So there was this one kind of like chart of percentage of the vote of anti-Brexit parties on like 40%, pro-Brexit parties on about 34%, and then Conservative and Labour split out, despite the fact that the Conservatives and, well, Conservatives are definitely pro-Brexit, but Labour has like been somewhat
irregular, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a leadership that is notionally still pro-Leave, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They have some members of the shadow cabinet, which are definitely more Remain-y, although how Remain-y they are sort of depends. And then they have a party membership, which is very Remain-y. I think I agree with you that actually the Tories are fairly unambiguously Leave, but Labour's position is actually a bit harder to pin down.
But we end up basically going for about a 50-50 split when it comes to the opinion of the electorate and whether or not we should leave the EU again. Like, it's very, very close, and that ambiguity of Labour certainly doesn't help things. I am perplexed as to how... all of these pundits and like media organizations, again I'm going to bash the mainstream media, look at me, I'm so fashionable, but how they are implying that this is an example of kind of like how the wider electorate would vote if they were asked to vote on Brexit again, because our turnout was like 35%, and it was like that's half of what we ended up seeing in the turnout for the referendum in 2016,
and that turnout is broadly in line with the European elections from 2014 as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it went up by about 2%.
Okay.
Well, no, it's about the same actually. Yeah. The turnout.
People are expecting more people to turn out for these elections because of the furore around Brexit, but it does kind of reinforce the general level of disengagement people have with these sort of elections in particular, I think.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily the reason. I think that one of the biggest reasons is that Conservatives and Labour just didn't fight this campaign.
There wasn't any lack of media coverage, though, I don't think.
Yeah, but most people don't watch the media like we do, Jimmy.
That's true. But I don't...
People aren't waking up to the dulcet tones of John Humphreys on Radio 4.
Well, neither do I, but... I don't. I'm just saying. I don't think that Labour and the Tories' lacklustre campaigning in this election is the reason why the vote wasn't any higher. I just don't. I don't think it really made any difference, really.
Do you reckon?
I don't think it would have massively increased turnout, to be honest. Like, maybe it would have gone up by a percent or two, but I think people are just generally uninterested in these elections. And I mean, people are generally uninterested in politics, to be honest with you.
Well, also generally, I think it... No, I'm not sure I agree with you. I don't think that this is a something that we can attribute low turnout to for the same reasons as something like as what turnout was in 2014. Mm. I think that it's because people expected us to be out of the European Union this time. And if there were actually any real consequences to who we were sending to the European Union, if, for example, there was an implication that Farage was now going to be included in any negotiations going forward, then maybe there would have been like more engagement and a higher turnout. But I think it's like it's insane to say that you can now... the amount of tweets that I have seen from people who should know better that are saying these results clearly show XXX. Like, whether it is Remain or the case for a people's vote, or whether or not it's the case for leaving with a hard Brexit or not. Like, people are framing it whatever, and it's a turnout that is half that of what we would usually see in like a general election or in a referendum.
You really need to start naming Tom Harwood when you complain about his behaviour on Twitter.
It's not. It's not just Tom Harwood. It's not just him. He is in the group of people that I'm talking about, but it isn't just him. It is actually the first time that the vote has gone up in the UK. Actually, since we started having parliamentary elections.
You mean European parliamentary elections?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Not since, like, the 1800s.
I mean, to be fair, there on my timeline, at least, on Twitter, there are a lot of people saying, actually, these votes don't really tell us a great deal, other than people are unimpressed with the Tories and Labour. The Tories for not carrying out Brexit so far, and Labour for having a very ambiguous position. And that's it. You know, that was expressed in the gains for the Brexit Party, the Lib Dems and the Greens, really.
So there was a tweet that I quite liked that was going quite well from a Twitter account just called Will, but it's WMCHBG. No idea who that is. But it was an interesting point on like how Jeremy Corbyn has kind of like performed. He's lost a general election, two sets of local elections, a European election. He's lost a competence vote from his own party. He's lost over 100 MPs from his front bench, and he's lost 8 MPs to Change UK. Why is he not resigning?
I suppose the same reasons, roughly, well, similar reasons to why Theresa May didn't resign.
A little bit of a peppering of a foreshadowing of what we'll talk about later.
Theresa May didn't resign, I think, because she thought, partly due to stubbornness, but she thought the circumstances were exceptional and therefore the conventions didn't really apply to her. Jeremy Corbyn hasn't resigned because he doesn't care about parliamentary convention or political convention. And he saw in his leadership a chance to actually fundamentally reform the Labour Party in his own image, which he's done so by, you know, variously changing the structures of the party. The example that springs to mind is elections on the National Executive Committee, which is now filled with Corbyn sympathisers, which means that actually the Labour Party has totally changed from what it was in Ed Miliband's time. So he feels no obligation to resign, so he won't do so until he's ready now.
He's also managed to change it in his own image by having that Snapchat filter that made you look like Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah.
Do you think so? I was listening. I was in a lovely situation where I'm 8 hours behind the UK at the moment, so I was listening to a lot of the results footage, like in my afternoon, and listening to kind of Radio 4 and like people from the Brexit cast, which was very good, kind of like talking, and all of them were. It was like 1 a.m. for them, and they were all kind of like falling asleep at their desks. And so eventually when Laura Kunzberg, who's the political editor of the BBC, she made a really interesting kind of like summary of what we were seeing with the European elections in the United Kingdom, that she suggested that people are giving up fighting for the middle, and this idea of compromise that Theresa May talked about, especially in her resignation speech, where she talked about compromise, there doesn't seem to be any appetite for compromise right now. You're either an extreme, one extreme or the other, whether that is Brexit or, well, I mean, that's how it manifests in the UK anyway. Is there any space for kind of like the grey between the black and the white?
I think it's pretty difficult because a lot of what could be considered a compromise, which would include Theresa May's deal, involves elements that are, you know, to some degree totally unappetising to at least hardline Brexiteers. And I suppose on the other side, there are many remaining commentators, at least, who think that actually the compromise is worse than full membership and affords no benefits that they can see. So from their point of view, the compromise is mad. I feel that, but you know, both extremes on either side feel that that's the case. And the European, this isn't to criticise the European Union, but it's not willing.
You criticise the European Union? Never.
Well, I'm actually not going to in this instance, but they're not willing to offer a deal that would be palatable, I think, both to Remainers and to Leavers. And you know, extremes on both of those wings. And I guess you could say, to a certain degree, there isn't a deal because the disagreement is so fundamental. Really, I mean, I suppose to give a slightly unappetizing comparison, if you look at sort of the US Civil War, which was fought over whether slavery should be legal or not,
you can't. Where are you going with this?
You can't have half legal slavery, can you? Like, slavery either is legal or it isn't, and in to some degree, we are either in the EU or we are not. I know there's various affiliate memberships, but you know, to a significant degree, the people that are in those affiliation arrangements, such as Switzerland and Norway, are kind of pseudo members of the EU. So if you're a proper Brexiteer, you think mm-hmm. that the UK should be a fully independent country, in that phrase, it's very hard to consider any of those options, you know, as anything more than a transition arrangement. So I get that Theresa May called for compromise, although I note that she did so after doing quite a lot to make compromise impossible during the first 2 years of her premiership. But I don't, in some ways, I don't really see what compromise is available at this point. It is a fundamental disagreement.
Well, Theresa May's deal is the compromise that is offered. Do you think that we're definitely going to end up crashing out of the EU without without a deal now? Then,
My understanding, which is not necessarily very solid, as I think I've just demonstrated, is that by automatic operation of the law, and assuming that nothing changes from mm-hmm. you know, the EU doesn't offer us an extension, and we don't ask for one necessarily, I think we leave the EU automatically on the 1st of November, on the 11th hour on the 31st of October. So the extension to the deadline just pushed back the deadline. It didn't fundamentally alter the nature of that, mm-hmm. I don't think. So something has to change for us not to leave the EU on no deal terms. We either have to pass the withdrawal agreement or a similar agreement, mm-hmm. or we have to reverse Article 50.
That was the case for March as well. I don't think it necessarily means just because we have this new deadline that all of a sudden this deadline is going to be an actual deadline that we adhere to. It all depends on who the Prime Minister is when it comes to autumn.
Well, you'll notice that I didn't say that it necessarily would happen that way, but something has to change. So, you know, some change in the arrangement has to take place, but automatically we will be leaving on the 31st of October, you know, depending on when the actual deadline is set.
Yeah, sure. That was me trying really hard to segue into Theresa May's resignation.
Oh, wait, before we do that.
Oh, okay, go on.
So UKIP lost all 24 of their seats last night.
Poor Carl Benjamin.
Well, he didn't have a seat to lose. And that includes UKIP's leader, Gerard Batten, who lost his seat in London. Are we assuming UKIP's done now? Do you think that they're totally defunct at this point?
Yeah, I feel kind of sorry for UKIP. UKIP started as kind of like actually quite a legitimate intellectual response to the UK being a member of the European Union. Like, it was started by an academic, then kind of got taken over by Nigel Farage. It became his party for such a long time, and then when he left it, it left a power vacuum that then sucked up all of these kind of like alt-righters who were looking for kind of like political power, and Like it's kind of it's a sad shell of what that party used to be. It used to be a huge force in UK politics, despite never. Oh no, it only won a seat once, and that was
Douglas Carswell.
Douglas Carswell.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's quite sad what's happened to UKIP actually, and has shown that without like a proper party infrastructure and like a strong party, not necessarily history, but people who are willing to kind of like put their time aside to work for a party, like some of the more traditional ones like Labour, Conservatives, or the Lib Dems, or the SNP, for example, who have very quite rigorous party structures. Like it's clear that UKIP was just kind of the ship in which Nigel Farage was sailing, and then he went and got a nicer, shinier one with a Brexit Party one.
Hmm. What do you make of Change UK's results then, on a similar note?
Awkward, innit? Poor Nick.
You're referring to Nick Matsey, who has previously been on the podcast and was the fifth candidate in the southeast region for.
I believe
Change
he was
UK.
Sixth candidate was he sixth? In Sorry. The southeast. Yeah.
Sorry, my mistake. They got 3.4% of the vote. The thing that struck me when I was watching the results come in is that it surely would have been far better for Change UK to throw their lot in with the Lib Dems and actually bolster the Lib Dem vote even more so. Mm-hmm. Do you not think?
Do you buy the a lot of Lib Dem and Change politicians have been asked this, and the kind of response that they have given was, "Oh, we just didn't have enough time to be able to organise something like that." Do you buy that as an excuse?
You mean a merger? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there was no time to like legitimately think about how they were going to strategise like that.
I mean, what's to think about? The Lib Dems already have all of that infrastructure you just mentioned, you know, in relation to UKIP. Surely it's just a matter of the Change UK MPs taking the Lib Dem whip, and then whichever organisations, you know, regional ones around the country, just get rolled into the Lib Dem equivalents.
Yeah. And interestingly, Change UK did combine with Renew, which is another kind of like the main party.
I remember Renew.
And so there was, they combined candidates. And so there was time to do stuff like that. But I think, so Leila Moran, who's the education spokesperson for the Lib Dems, isn't going to run for the leadership of the Liberal Democrats, apparently, but has been touted as kind of like she's a real star in the party now. Mm. The MP for West Oxford and Abingdon. She was asked this question about whether or not Change UK would now be absorbed into the Liberal Democrats and be given the ability to like run for the leadership and all that kind of stuff, and she was very coy about it actually, and it'll be interesting to see if that's something that actually ends up happening. But also, when you look at something like Chuka Amuna's seat or Anna Soubry's seat, them switching to the Lib Dems is not necessarily going to be something that ensures their longevity as members of Parliament.
It won't, but in many ways you've got to think, like, whatever fate that the Change UK MPs have under the Lib Dem banner, they're surely better placed to win their respective seats than if they just run as Change UK candidates. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I know that, you know, there are concerns about the toxicity of the Lib Dem branding because of the coalition years, but it seems like the less risky option to me. And intellectually, it's just more honest. You know, they have the same policies as the Lib Dems. There's no good reason why Change UK needs to exist, from my point of view.
Yeah, agreed. But then whenever I think about this, I'm always like, oh, does that mean there's going to be a name change? And I love a bit of branding.
I mean, whatever branding decisions are made, they should not be in the gift of anyone involved in Change UK's branding, which has been an absolute fucking disaster from day one.
100% agreed. So Theresa May is stepping down next week.
She is, Friday. I mean, this week. No, sorry. No, it's Friday the 7th, so next week, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Did you feel for her? Or are you like Owen Jones and only think about all of the terrible things that she did as Prime Minister?
I mean, just on a gut level, I didn't care. But if I want to intellectualise it a bit...
you didn't feel for her? Like, she broke down at the end.
She's a
like
grown
that. I thought that was
woman.
Really.
Jesus Christ! If a man had blubbed in the way she had done at the box, people have been like, "Oh my God, pull yourself together." you know, you're supposed to be running a country. She has control of the nuclear submarine codes. She should be able to just hold it together and just deliver a resignation speech.
She's had a tough few years. Like I can't... she has failed as a prime minister on almost every single front. Her legacy is always going to be being the Brexit prime minister, and that looks like it's an absolute shit show now. Do you think that it's irresponsible for her to be stepping down now, though?
No, I think she should have resigned a while back. Notwithstanding that, her successor will see many of the same problems as her, it was pretty obvious that within the Tory party, her political capital had been spent, probably even at the time of the 2017 general election, really. And, yeah. She's kept going for almost 2 years after that. She was a busted flush a long time ago, and she...
A busted flush.
Yeah. Is that a poker metaphor? Some sort of card metaphor. Anyway.
Sure, something along those lines.
Yeah, and you say she had a hard task, but she also, even when you acknowledge she had a hard task, made a lot of major strategic errors. Obviously the general election, everyone in the know expected her to do well out of that, but she still called a general election after triggering Article 50, which was a very stupid mistake to make. Even if she'd got away with it, it still would have been a bad decision. And she went out of, as I alluded to earlier, she went out of her way to alienate people from the beginning. Admittedly, because I do think that after the referendum, Britain should fully disengage from the EU in the long term. I was partly sympathetic to that, but it would have been a legitimate reading of the referendum result to say, okay, the result was close. I obviously Theresa May campaigned to remain as well, and she could have gone down the route of compromise early on when she still had a bit of a majority in the House of Commons. And she still had, was still in the honeymoon period of her premiership as well. So, I get what you're saying about on a personal level, it's been a pretty tough 3 years for her, but she chose all of this, and a lot of the mistakes were of her own making. So it's hard to feel that sorry for her.
It was, I think, it made me like her, for her to talk about the necessity of compromising. And the idea that actually it's a negotiation, you do have to compromise. Is there any space for that at all? Theresa May's deal or any deal was your preference before kind of like these elections and before she stood down. Mm. Do you worry about the extremity of the person who is going to end up taking over, who's probably going to be from a Brexiteer background and probably going to be okay with taking this out with no deal?
I'd prefer not to go out on no deal, but I do think the referendum should be honoured. And if the only way that can be honoured is via no deal, that's also...
Burn everything.
It's unfortunate that it's had to end up this way, and it isn't my preferred route out, but I guess I do accept no deal as a possible way out of this. So in that sense, I'm not really threatened by the likes of Boris Johnson or Dominic Raab becoming Prime Minister.
I'm so curious of this, because I don't understand. I don't think that there is legitimacy and democratic legitimacy for us going to a no deal without that being confirmed by the public. I know that because that was not on the cards. That was never talked about. Like it was even by the people who were running that campaign, the idea of us leaving without a deal was poo-pooed and said that it was fear-mongering. And I think that if we are going to leave in such an extreme way, that needs to... And I know that I talk about the need for another public vote. But I feel like if we're going to go down that route, that needs to be confirmed by the people, because that goes against so much of what was promised. And it's so disruptive to the... I don't believe that people shouldn't be able to vote against their self-interest. But people should have a say into whether or not we ruin the ability to import insulin.
I think that's untrue, the reference to insulin importation.
I know it's one of it, but we know that it's going to be hugely disruptive to people's lives.
It will be disruptive in certain instances, that is true. There's no particular majority among the public for anything, I don't think. There's a about a third.
Which is why you, which is why you rank them. You rank them in order of preference. Remove the one that has the lowest amount, and then put their second preference into whichever of the first two options is appropriate.
So, in your head, it's obviously in the system you've just put forward. It's obviously very possible that you could have a first round of voting that splits three ways, and then a second round of voting that comes out with Remain being the most popular option, and
also with the possibility of a hard Brexit being the option.
It seems very unlikely. I mean, it seems unlikely at the moment that would end up being the option. But if
then people should be. Then what's the problem with people deciding that that's the better outcome? If people have changed their mind, then let them change their mind.
Surely it'll just be if you have a vote that is set up in that way, it will be vulnerable to all of the arguments about misinformation and political scaremongering and political shenanigans in general, in particular criticism of the deal and the way it's been handled by largely Remain leading politicians and bureaucrats that were deployed by Remainers against Brexiteers, but in this instance would be deployed by Brexiteers against Remainers.
I don't quite understand.
I'm saying that politically speaking, another referendum, I don't think, will get us out of this. I think it will just end up. It's a self, it's a ready-made betrayal narrative waiting to happen, basically.
Mm-hmm. But it looks like the only two things that are possibly going to happen are no deal or a second referendum. Like that is, I think, probably the next step. And I would rather no deal if it did happen, and if we did end up putting no deal or Remain to the people, and that looks like the most likely one because Theresa May's deal is dead now. Like, I don't think there's any way that that's going to be put forward as an option.
So you don't think it's any possibility that the next Prime Minister can pick up Theresa May's deal, perhaps negotiate some minor cosmetic changes, and then put it back through Parliament with a different leader in charge, potentially get it through?
With the current parliamentary arithmetic, I'm unconvinced.
I think it's a different proposition if you have a Leave-leaning politician such as, say, Boris Johnson putting forward that deal, because it reframes the argument, basically. The withdrawal agreement...
Just because of the leader? I don't think so.
I think it does. I mean, that's obviously just a disagreement we have. But I think with a different leader in charge, it might change the nature of the argument.
I mean, we'll see. It will depend hugely on who actually ends up winning, and we'll see. It will depend on how the EU actually deal with it as well, and whether or not they see it as a legitimate. This is a chance to reopen negotiations and give them a chance to reopen negotiations. We should talk about the candidates who have put themselves forward to replace Theresa May. There are 13 of them.
13 at the moment.
Yeah. It's
almost like a democratic primary. It's crazy.
Oh my god, it's a bloody nightmare. So I'm sure the people who listen to this podcast will know this, but essentially they do several rounds of voting among members of Parliament from the Conservative Party, eliminating the person with the lowest votes each time, and then the two people left standing then go to the Conservative Party members, who are very, very Brexity, very, very white, very, very old. And there's less than 100,000 of them, probably, right? Plus me!
Yes, yeah. I mean, most of the country is white, Jazza. I know I have to keep reminding you of this, but it's not that surprising that the Tory party is very white.
Compare the Conservative Party demographics to something like the Labour Party demographics. It's a significant thing that should be noted.
It should be noted, but you can overstate it, but I think you just did. So,
oh my god.
Who are the candidates? Let's run through.
Do you want me to run down all of them, or just the ones that people know and care about?
I'll tell you what. I'll read out them in order, and you can give me a one-word reaction.
Oh my god! Yes. Oh, I love this game. Let's do it.
I'm going. Guido Fawkes has compiled a list of how many nominations they have or how many backers they have. So I'm going to go
fantastic website,
order.
Guido Fawkes.
So I've got. I think Liz Truss has ruled herself out. But what would you say to Liz Truss?
Pork markets.
Pork
was
markets.
It?
Yeah, that is a thing. She's a sort of libertarian, Uber backing candidates. She's big on Uber.
Uber back it. She loves Uber, and she loves wood burning stoves.
Oh, wood burning stoves are quite nice. Okay, this is going to take a long time if we take this long.
Okay, Graham, yeah, quick.
Graham Brady, former chair of the 1922 committee.
Traditional.
Traditional, yep. Penny Mordaunt. I can't remember. Oh, she's defence secretary, isn't she?
Yep. Oh, God help us all.
I actually don't know anything about her. Rory Stewart, I can't remember what his role is, but he presented
a nice
documentary.
He's the International Development Secretary.
Yeah, he presented a nice documentary on Afghanistan that's available on Netflix.
Sure. So, sure, he's a lovely guy. Probably boring.
James Cleverley.
Who?
He talks a lot of shit on Twitter, and he's one of the few people that openly said he wanted to be Prime Minister before, sort of years ago, when somebody asked him. Because you know they usually
avoid the question. Yeah, very clearly means that he's not going to be Prime Minister. Next.
Okay, Brexit hard man Steve Baker.
There you go.
Okay. I'm a mother, Andrea Leadsom.
I would be surprised if she got through to the final round again.
Okay.
And I'd be terrified if she got through to the final round again.
Andrea Leadsom, for listeners who may have forgotten, was Theresa May's competitor in the last two of the last leadership election, and had to pull out after she told the Times that she would be a better PM because she was a mother and Theresa May was barren. Yeah. I paraphrase slightly.
Oh no!
That is what she said. I mean, not verbatim.
She didn't say she was barren. Jimmy. We're going to get letters. By letters, I mean tweets.
Okay. Mark Harper?
I have no idea.
I don't know who that is. I'll Google it later. Esther McVeigh.
Good Morning Britain, but for politics.
Hmm. Did she used to be a journalist?
She did used to be a TV presenter. That's different to a journalist.
Okay. Matt Hancock, who has his own app.
I actually quite like Matt Hancock. I think he's quite cute. Oh. I'd vote for... If he were in the final runoff, I'd vote for Matt.
Okay, interesting. The Saj, or Sajid Javid, to give him his full name.
Oh, God. He's a bad person. No.
He's a bad person?
Yeah.
Why is he a bad person?
Have you read the London Review of Books article? It's not an expose, but it's a really detailed... kind of like investigative journalist piece about the fallout of Grenfell and how he used it for his own political ends.
Oh no. Okay, yeah. He's also an arch Thatcherite, isn't he? That's a fair description of him.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, former health secretary and current foreign secretary Jeremy Hunt.
Again, God help us all. He's like the definition of like men failing upwards.
Oh man, you don't use that phrase, but I think I'm failing upwards as we speak. To the bone. Boris Johnson.
Wouldn't that will he get through to the final round? I don't know. People seem to be talking as if he's already the leader. I can see it not going so well with him.
Yeah, if he doesn't make it through the MP selections, which is very possible because he's not well liked by a lot of them. In fact, some of them went so far as to say they would resign the Tory whip rather than serve in a Johnson government.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Including Dominic Grieve and I think Anna Soubry, although that's no longer relevant as she has already resigned the Tory whip.
Right, yeah.
But if he makes it to the final two, very popular among Tory members, the membership in general. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why people are assuming that he is the candidate, it's his to lose, is the phrase that is often said. Boris Johnson's former partner in crime, Michael Gove.
You know what I love? I love the photo that, it's kind of like his parliamentary photo that has, it's his photo for his job that's on all of the websites. And sure. He just looks so happy to be there.
Are you happy to leave it at that? Is that your comment on him? he was controversial.
He's very popular. He's apparently quite good at any job that he does. I think he would probably be a competent prime minister. I would be terrified as to what policies he would put forward.
So he's generally regarded as very effective is maybe the wrong word, but he's very dedicated at putting his policy ideas into practice. Whether you think
he's
that's
very
a good
popular
thing or
in
not
the media.
Really depends on what you think of his policy ideas. I think it's fair to say. See his record on education. Anyway, last but not least, with the most nominations, Dominic Raab.
I think he's probably going to be the next Prime Minister. And yes, this is a Jazzer prediction. This is a Jazzer prediction, so it is going
to
happen.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, there's no need to vote, actually, because Jazzer's already called it. We can save a lot of time.
Yeah,
I'll just email Downing Street, shall I?
Yeah, he's like, oh, guys, Jazzer's already spoken. Like, it's fine.
Why do you think Dominic Raab is going to become the next PM?
He's not Boris Johnson, but he ticks all of the Boris Johnson boxes. He's young, reasonably handsome.
He's got a very strong receding hairline at this point.
A very strong receding hairline. But, you know, don't be cruel. Just because you can have a mop.
I have to insult boarding men while I can, Jazzer.
And he doesn't have as much baggage as nearly everybody else. So, like, I think that the most likely last three, perhaps, or maybe the last four, we'll go with, are probably going to be people like Jeremy Hunt, Michael Gove, Boris Johnson, and Dominic Raab. I don't think anybody else really stands a chance. Mm. Boris Johnson, I think, will be kicked out at about that point because he's the front runner, first of all, and also because he's and the Tories hate front runners.
The conventional wisdom in the Tory party is that the front runner never wins the actual leadership election.
The person who wins ends up winning by not being the front runner. So Boris Johnson, I don't think, has legs to be Prime Minister. Govey has so much baggage from the politics that he's played that he would then end up leaving. So I would perhaps we'll end up seeing like a Jeremy Hunt, Dominic Raab runoff, and then Raab wins because he's backed Brexit forever, and would be more popular with the wider Tory party.
Hmm. Yeah, Dominic Raab's most famous moments, I think, probably even within political geekery, is when he said that he was surprised to find that most trade, international
came
trade,
through ports
goes through Dover, specifically mm-hmm. Dover.
Which
I think is less dumb than it sounds, but still sounds quite dumb. So I don't think that's good in mm-hmm. a general sense. But yeah, as you say, it is all down to the, what is it, slightly less than 300 Tory MPs and the membership now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't say that he was going to be good at the job, but
true.
I said that he's probably going to get the job. It'll be, I mean, watch this space. Who knows what's going to end up happening with a new Prime Minister. I actually don't think an awful lot is going to change. And I think that we're going to continue to not have any parliamentary arithmetic for anything going forward. Having a really strong case for no deal on the table could change some of that, though, because that is... Jimmy, it is a bad idea.
What, no deal is a bad idea?
Yeah.
Is it a worse idea than overturning the referendum? Through whatever means
which is why there should be another vote. I'm not okay with just cancelling it. I'm not okay with just revoke. You need to have an equal and opposite kind of like reaction if you want to overturn a democratic decision. And so there needs to be some kind of democracy in the way that we go forward, whether that's a general election or whatever. Oh, God, what if Dominic Raab becomes leader and then calls another bloody election? For goodness sake.
I mean, to respond to your previous point before I respond
anyway,
to that
anyway, sorry, that was...
I think that, from my point of view, having a second vote is not not politically that much more legitimate than just outright revoking Article 15, cancelling Brexit. That's really my objection to it. On your point about the general election, how likely do you think it is that we'll have another one this year?
I don't know, but this is the thing that is going to return. We saw people vote for kind of like the extreme parties on either end when it came to Leave and Remain in the European parliamentary elections. We see people returning to the main centre parties in the UK parliamentary elections, and so I don't think that's necessarily what we're going to end up with is the returning of a parliament based on a single issue where people are actually voting on multiple different issues and they're voting for like a leader rather than how we leave the European Union. I feel like the only way, and the amount of people who are like, it's now clear that there is X, Y, and Z, like I said before, that there is not going to be clarity until we actually ask those questions again. Like, you can attach any kind of baggage and you can attach any analysis that you like to people voting for the Conservative Party, but unless you ask them how you want to leave the European Union again, and out of these options, which one is the best one, and which do you think we should actually do, you can't say, oh, this means this. Because people vote for the Conservative Party because of immigration. They vote for the Conservative Party because of tradition, not necessarily just because of one issue. And the fact that Brexit is one issue means that we need to have a second vote on it, because we shouldn't also have manifestos drowned out by one question.
I think we can wrap it up there.
Vote for Jazza 20. No, never vote for me. If I ever run for office, just stop me.
I think you should run for office just so we can record it on
really
the podcast.
Oh my God.
I'm not interested in you winning.
You are the worst. Please follow us on Twitter at Right Dishonor. You can follow me as an individual human person at Jazza John, or Jimmy at JDE Nichols.
Or you can go to the website rightdishonorable.com or our Patreon page patreon.com/rightdishonorable if you want to give us some money.
Very exciting. Thank you very much, everybody. Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.
Right, that's it.